So Hanukkah always begins on the 25th day of Kislev, and it goes into the next month of Tevis, because Hanukkah is 8 days. So Hanukkah always begins in Kislev and ends in Tevis. It depends whether there is a little technical difference, whether the 10th of Tevis falls 7 or 8 days after Hanukkah, depends on whether Kislev has 29 or 30 days. That depends on the count in on the Hebrew day. But the bottom line is the month of Tevis, and the fast is the 10th of Tevis. Today on the Hebrew calendar is the 10th day of the month of Tevis. So it's known as one of the minor fast days. We know we have one biblical fast day. That's Yom Kippur. The Torah is so concerned about our health that on the one biblical fast day, it gives us a commandment, a mitzvah to eat on Erev Tisha B'Av, on the day before. Of course, we'd eat anyway, but in addition to eating anyway, we get a special mitzvah of having a special meal, your kinedlach, or whatever you make. And there's some rabbis who felt they had gum all day or had sucking candies every moment you eat, you know, you get an extra mitzvah. But that's the point being is, in Judaism, they're very, compared to holidays, there are many more feast days than fast days. In contrast to other religions where the focus is on fasting, because Judaism is the original religion, let's say from our perspective, and many religions are based on Judaism. They all take different things, and so let's say some religions they take the Ahavta L'Reicha Kamocha, love your neighbor like yourself, or the religion of love. Some people say it comes from Jesus, but obviously it's not true, because we already have it in the Old Testament. It's a verse in the Old Testament, so we know it clearly comes from Moshe and God. Other religions focused on Yom Kippur as their main day. They're very into, what do we do on Yom Kippur? We fast. So they have a lot of fasting. Ramadan, 30 days. And what do we do on Yom Kippur? We pray 5 times a day. Usually we pray 3 times a day. So those religions, they pray 5 times a day, every day, not just on Yom Kippur. And they go down on the ground, and they go down on their knees to pray. We only do that on Yom Kippur. So different religions take from different parts of Judaism, but from our point of view, we have many more feast days than fast days, and the one biblical fast day we have, the Torah said, make sure you eat a lot, because when you have enough strength in order that you should be able to fast on Yom Kippur. So much so, we all know if one is unhealthy, if one is putting themselves in danger by fasting on Yom Kippur, they're not even allowed to fast. In other words, sometimes for that person, it's a mitzvah to eat on Yom Kippur. For the average healthy person, there's a mitzvah to fast on Yom Kippur. But if you're elderly, sick, in a situation where it's endangering yourself by not eating, so then...
At what point are you considered elderly?
Yeah, there's no, elderly by itself doesn't mean anything. It depends on... You could be elderly and very healthy, and you could be 25 and a diabetic. Elderly by itself isn't a factor. I'm just saying, usually if you're elderly, then you're more, when you're 80s, 90s, 100, you usually have more issues than someone as a 20-year-old. It's more the health issue. In other words, if you're a healthy 100-year-old and everyone says it's no problem fasting, then you fast. If you are a 20-year-old with diabetes, then you're prohibited to fast. So it's mostly health, but obviously age might play a role, only because practically, not because the age itself plays the role. Usually the older you get, the more, illnesses that come up. But it's more of a, there's no age. If I hit 100, I don't have to fast anymore. We're happy if we hit 100 and we do have to fast, that means we're still healthy. So we're hoping we're 100 and we could still fast. That's what we shoot for. Or as they say in Adnea the Estrim, the Jewish tradition, whether it's true or not, that people say, Adnea the Estrim, 120, because that was Moshe Rabbeinu, Moses. He lived to 120, but it's not just living to 100. It's not just a number. He was healthy and vibrant to 120. You know, in Judaism, we don't believe in this breaking the Guinness World of Records for if a person just to live long and you're in and you're not functional. There's no concept that, you know, you can't go ahead and kill someone, but I'm saying there's no concept of just being alive for the sake of being alive. The purpose of being alive is to be functional and be able to do things. So either way, so we only have one biblical fast day, and on the day before, we have a biblical commandment to eat. However, we have some other fast days from our prophets. The prophet Zechariah said we have the fast on the fast of the fourth, the Som HaRevi'i, the fast of the fifth, the fast of the seventh, and the fast of the tenth. And when he talks about numbers, he's talking about months. He's not talking about the date. So when he says the fast of the fourth month, he's referring to the fast we have in the summer, the 17th day of Tammuz. The fast of the fifth month is also a fast we have in the summer 3 weeks later, Tisha B'Av, the day the temple was destroyed. The fast of the seventh month is right after Rosh Hashanah. There's a minor fast they call Tzom Gedaliah. And the one we're talking about today is the fast of the tenth month. It happens to be the tenth day also, but he's talking about the tenth month in the prophet. So these four fast days were set up by the prophets, and so it's interesting, on one hand it calls them fast days, which usually implies sadness and not happy. Most times you're not, unless Yom Kippur is the exception to the rule. It's the happiest day of the year, but we're not fasting because of mourning, we're fasting, you know, because we're like angels, we don't have to eat. But these four fast days are sad days. We're mourning over the destruction of the temple. So the 10th of Tevis, so these four fast days are from the prophet. So which one is it? So at the end of the verse says it's happy, and the beginning of the verse says it's sad, it's a fast. So the Gemara says there are three levels of these fast days, or maybe, when the temple in Jerusalem is up, and we live on, and we have our religious freedom and everything, these turn into happy days. Because the only reason we're fasting is because of the destruction of the temple. If the temple's up, then obviously it's not a sad day, it's a happy day. If we live in a time not too long ago, the Holocaust, and unfortunately through Jewish history, it's happened quite often, we don't have a temple, and we live under religious persecution, then these fast days are mandatory. However, let's say I'd call it North America, where we don't have a temple, but we're not under religious persecution either. There's no shortage of anti-Semites. You're always going to have anti-Semites around, but they're not part of the fabric of the law. You know, the government in America or Canada isn't anti-Semitic. There might be, you know, whatever. You know, we can debate that or not. But I'm saying individuals definitely are. But on the simple level, they're not. When they're making, there's no anti-Semitic laws on the books per se. There used to be laws, we know, in Westdale about no Jews living here, but I don't think they're on the, maybe if they're on the books, they're not kept anymore.
Was that actually so?
Yes, absolutely. Like
if you wanted to buy a house in Westdale, they wouldn't sell it to you?
No. If somebody bought a house in Westdale, they had to sign a covenant, and the covenant said they would not sell the house to Jews, to Italians of foreign extraction, I forget, there are other groups, specific groups that were, probably there was a color.
Yeah, I think it was blacks also, yeah.
But it specified that if you moved into Westdale, you could not sell your house to somebody in that group. And that lasted, I think, until either just before or just after the Second War.
And what happened? How did it end? Oh, you don't know.
I don't know the specifics, but I would think by that time, you know, probably civil rights groups, yeah, such as they were. They weren't like they are today.
And what would have happened in theory while this book was on, the wall was out and someone did do it, like the sale wouldn't be good, or this wouldn't be like, what, from a legal point, like, was it binding? Or
Absolutely. It, yeah. was, it was certainly binding.
Yeah.
And now,
no, I'm saying, like,
enforced it.
Right, you mean whether the person could get a fine or whether the sale wouldn't be good. You're not sure how far it went. But
well, if it was a covenant, the sale would not be good.
Right, so therefore it would be enough. That's what I'm saying.
So the sale would be null.
Exactly. So even if you...
if there are any other penalties.
Right, so even if you wanted to, you wouldn't... It wouldn't have made a difference, because once you signed that, that became the binding.
It became binding.
Exactly. Yeah. So it wasn't.
I've seen that well documented.
Yeah.
And somebody somewhere has.
Yeah, I spoke to a couple of lawyers were telling me. Yeah, so it wasn't just the anti-Semitic. It wasn't just limited to Jews. I think it was
gypsies,
blacks. Yeah. So it wasn't just anti-Semitism, but it was any type of. Yeah. It wasn't specifically Jews, but Jews were included.
Usually where you've got prejudice directed against one group, sooner or later...
100%, as they say.
Sooner or later...
It hits everyone.
You know the famous saying, they came for so-and-so, and I did nothing, then they came for so-and-so, and
absolutely.
I came for so-and-so, and then
there's
finally,
no one,
when they came for me, I had nobody else.
There's no one else to go to, yeah.
Nobody to help.
Exactly, and I think in one of the books, The History of the Jews, I forgot who wrote it, that... Basically, that's a good precursor. You know how a country is going to be. You see how they treat the Jewish people, and you see what's going to be in terms of how they're going to treat other minorities and other...
Or the reverse,
yeah.
If you see how they treat other minorities,
right.
you can...
But usually Jews are first, but I'm saying is, I'm sure it's true the other way also, but the point was anti-Semitism is a good test, you know, for the other way. But either way, so that's the way it was, so... So we had the four fast days. So what happened? So these four fast days are, so Tisha B'Av is strict because it was both temples, but the Talmud says today, since we don't live under religious persecution, it's only optional. The Jewish people have taken upon themselves, either you voluntold, as they say, or either you're forced to volunteer, you volunteered. The bottom line is they're on a lower level in terms of, from the Gemara, it's voluntary, and we've taken upon ourselves. So what happened specifically on this day? So the siege of Jerusalem by Nebuchadnezzar of Babylonia, an event that began on that day, the 10th of Tevis, and ultimately culminated in destruction of Solomon's temple, Shlomo HaMelech, the first temple, and the conquest of the kingdom of Judah, today, the southern West Bank. So what happened was, on the 10th day of the 10th month of Tevis, in the 9th year of Sidkiyahu's reign, 588 BCE, Nebuchadnezzar, the Babylonian king, began the siege of Jerusalem. 18 months later, on the 17th of Tammuz, at the end of the 11th year of his rule, 586, but he broke through the city walls. The siege ended with the destruction of the temple 3 weeks later on the 9th of Av, and the end of the first kingdoms and the exile of the Jewish people to Babylon. So the 10th of Tevis is thus considered part of the cycle of fasts connected with these events, which includes the 17th of Tammuz as well as the 9th of Av. And as we mentioned, that's where it's first mentioned in the book of Zechariah when he says the fast of the 10th month, and there's even different opinions what happened. One said it's on the 5th day of Tevis, which was the destruction, the news of the destruction of the temple reached those already in exile in Babylonia. The 10th day is observed today according to other opinion. So there's different opinions when it happened, but that's what the 10th above. So that's why we fast today. Because basically it was the beginning of the end. He began the siege of Jerusalem, which ended up later on, you know, breaking the city walls and ultimately the destruction of the temple. So that's the 10th day. Interesting, they bring down that they were old, we don't fast today, but they bring down a custom of fasting on the 8th day and the 9th day of Tevis. In other words, yesterday and the day before. What happened on those days?
Hello. Where do you go to lunch?
Next.
Yep, right, just make a right turn, go right in.
So one tradition. So what happened on the eighth day of Tevis? So on the eighth day of Tevis, during the 3rd century BCE, that during the Second Temple time, the king of Egypt ordered the translation of the Hebrew Bible into Greek. So what the story goes is 72 sages were placed in their own like jails, their own rooms, and ordered to translate the Torah into Greek. The expected outcome would be a multitude of different translations that would be compared and critiqued by the Greeks, as there were some sentences in the Bible that could be understood as offensive to pagans if taken wrongly and would need to be changed. That was the concept. This would demonstrate the muddled meanings of the Torah and the divergent opinions of Jewish interpreters. However, that's what they were hoping to do, and then they take out what they don't like. However, all 72 sages independently made identical translations into Greek. The Greeks saw this as the most impressive feat. However, imagine they all translated the same way. However, various rabbinical sources see this event as a tragedy, a debasement of the divine nature of the Torah and the subversion of the spiritual qualities. They reason that upon translation from the original Hebrew, the Torah's legal codes and deeper layers. And so some found this as a time of darkness that it became that they didn't like it. You know, which is a discussion why. Because today we assume we have many translations into English. We assume it's a good thing that we're translating English. You know, so now many people don't know Hebrew and they know English. So therefore you open up a Chumash now. So today we assume it's a good thing, all the translations. It's a discussion why back then. What was the? It was more the reason for the change. They weren't looking to... On that day, they were looking to make a mockery of the Torah and try to find different interpretations, and then they'd come back and the rabbis and say, "Why? What does this mean? Isn't this against our religion?" So it was a miracle that happened that God had each one translated into Greek. That's why in that time it might have been bad. Today everyone's in agreement just about that, translating things into English is a good thing. Others say it, you know, other times it was to learn the language. Either way, today it's fine. That's what they claim happened on the 8th of Tevis. But were they right? What happened on the 9th day of Tevis? It says in the Shulchan Aruch, it says something happened, but we don't know what it was. Oh, so don't say anything. Like, what do you mean? There's a fast day on the 9th of Tevis, but we don't know what happened. So many commentators give different suggestions what happened. So one I said this morning in our prayers, Ezra the scribe, he was one of the last, he was the one who brought some Jews back to the Holy Land from the Babylonian exile and who ushered in the era of the Second Temple. He died on this day. You'll say, so what? He died there. What's so special about him? Because he was the end of prophecy. He was the last prophet, and therefore it was no longer prophecy. Others claim that Esther died on that day. Esther, Queen Esther, she died on the 9th of Av. But some have a more interesting interpretation. That's why it was hidden. You know what they claim died on this day, yesterday? Jesus, which would fit in well. If you go with, historians say they think he died in the spring. But according to the school, according to the school of thought, that New Year's was his bris, 8 days after Christmas, and then it would fit in with that. But I think most assume it was Easter. But there are those people, right? So back then, that was one of the assumptions historically that he died during this time. That's why it's the Yiddish people say it's called Nitelnacht. In Yiddish, they used to call it Nitel. Nacht is night, Nittel, N-I-T-A-L. So in Hebrew, Nun, Yud, Tes, Lamed. The Nun stands for not the death of Jesus, the birth of Jesus. I mean, Nolad, he was born on that day. He was born. today on the 9th of Tevis. Nolad Yeshu, Jesus was born, Tes Tevis. So that's why of course they knew it happened, but they didn't want to put it in because all the censors would come and they change it and things. So therefore, they're not going to write, we're fasting today because this person was born on this day and it turned out to be terrible tragedies for the Jews. More importantly for me, it's my wife's birthday, is the 9th of Tevis. But so another thing that people say, this guy Shimon HaKab, this person Shimon, who he wrote a there's a book written, I think the Tumim, he writes about that some say what happened was there was this guy Shimon HaKapir, Shimon, who went ahead, he went undercover into Christianity. And there was originally, you all know, Peter, Paul, they were all Yidden. They were all Jews. And in fact, when Christianity started, and you almost couldn't even tell the difference. It was all Jews. And basically, you didn't even know. It was very hard to determine what was a Jewish minion. Well, you know, some say if it was mixed seeding, whatever, a different reason to try to figure out what was a Jewish minion, what wasn't. So it was very hard to tell. So this guy, Shimon, had this idea, well, you know, I'm going to go undercover. I'm going to try to change Christianity to make it, it used to be, like they used to observe Shabbos on Shabbos. He spoke to the leaders. He wanted to get them to change Shabbos to Sunday to make all these changes that it'll be clear that they were separate. So he wanted to say, you know, we want it to be separate so people, he didn't tell them because he didn't want Jews to get mixed up. He wanted to say for other positive reasons, and the people on the board or whoever were making those decisions, we like what you're saying, but one condition, you can't just take off and disappear. You got to actually stay with us. He said, okay, I'll stay with us. So he stayed with us and he changed. And in fact, they say he was Mary's brother, they say, according to this tradition. And he used to sit on the square. So when they weren't looking, he actually took out his Hebrew books and still studied his Judaism. But outwardly, he became a Christian. So when he died on this day, so that's why, you know, he did tremendous work. He separated, you know, so many different traditions on what happened on the eighth day. They say that the Torah was converted to Greek, and even though the miracle happened that it left it, but it was a dark time. The ninth was different opinions. Ezra died on that day, the end of prophecy. This guy Shimon died. Maybe Esther died on that day, or Yashka was born on that day, or most importantly, my wife was born on that day. That's not why it's a sad day. That's why it'd be a happy day. But and then the 10th of Tevis is what we're observing today. That's when the Nebuchadnezzar began the siege, and which ultimately left into the destruction of the temple. So that's why I'm fasting today. But it's one of the relatively, it is the shortest fast of the year for me. The ones in the summer, it's only because practically speaking, it usually falls out in December and January. So this fast begins in the morning, not at night. So on the calendar, it said it starts about 6:30 in the morning. So I got up early. I had my coffee, my cookies, and my banana, my usual breakfast, and before the fast. And the fast is over, whatever. I didn't check the exact time, 5:15, 5:30. So
you're not going to suffer too much.
Today. Right, it's a relatively...
I'd like to go back on the reason why the Greeks wanted the translation from Hebrew into Greek. Now, you said because they wanted to mock the Israelis. But it seems to me like that an awful lot of work, you know, just to have a whole... it seems to me it'd be...